I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Alistair, when's the last time you did something good for your face?
I don't like where this is going.
Well, I recently got a Harry's Razor starter pack and... it's one of the best things I've ever done for my face.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, Andy, do you know about this?
Alistair, I've heard about this.
If you go to harrys.com/think tank.
Think tank.
Think tank. Then all you got to pay is for the price of shipping.
Which is what?
$13.
No. You get $13 worth of value.
Yeah.
What do you pay?
Just the price of shipping.
Which is a couple of bucks.
It's a few bucks.
It's nothing.
It's almost nothing.
Right?
Do you know exactly how much it is?
No. Because it varies depending on your location.
Well,
that's how shipping works.
Well, it felt like you were trapping me by asking me how much it was.
I'm sorry, Alistair.
You obviously knew that I couldn't know that.
I was hoping for, a couple of bucks. We've done this ad many times now. And every time it's a joy. And every time I say shipping is a couple of bucks, it's nothing.
Yeah, no, but I was doing it.
All right.
I was doing it my style.
It's a totally different thing.
So if you go to harrys.com/think tank.
Or is it two in tank?
No, it's think tank.
Okay, great.
You can get that starter pack. Or wait till partway through the show and we'll tell you a little bit more.
Right. But if you don't want to, if you can't wait that long.
If you can't wait.
By all means. Go there right now.
Yeah.
And we'll see you later on when you come back to the show, clean shaven, with a fresh face.
Yeah.
And the comedy that's coming your way
will
fall on soft and...
tissues.
Yes, tissues.
Tissues. And we'll be able to feel it. I can already feel it that one of you is cleanly shaved.
You think this is a one-way street? You think you're the only ones who experience you listening to this podcast?
No.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. This is a new... podcast technology's come a long way, and we're able to now experience your experience as part of, feedback metrics.
Yep, and one of you is really angry.
Mm-hmm.
Not happy about even this. Anyway.
Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas. Thank you so much for listening to the show this far.
Yeah, so far you've done really great. What about, can you picture a person who's replaced their skeleton with bricks?
Alistair, what do you mean by that?
Well, let's say it's like a Wolverine scenario.
Okay.
but instead of
instead of making a man with an adamantium skeleton who's stronger and more powerful, they've taken the it's the three little pigs, right? But but now instead of building a house, right?
Yeah.
They're building a new skeleton. One of the pigs built a skeleton out of straw. One of the twigs built a skeleton out of sticks. Another, third one, skeleton out of bricks.
Right.
And he's the one that we respect.
He hasn't necessarily made them out of a material that's, like adamantium, much stronger.
No.
But he's made it out of one that is definitely heavier and more brittle.
I mean, it's like some futuristic military type thing. But instead, it's in a future where we've realized that, violence isn't the answer. And maybe, that they're taking a mutant man and they've found a way to make him more sensitive, more sensible, and to actually see that, you know, to, he's enhanced in such a way that he's able to see that there are other solutions. He's forced to see, find solutions that aren't violence.
Well, that's quite an interesting thing, is that instead of, like, just de-arming a country, which I think maybe you should do, you know, stricter gun rules and things like that, and all that kind of stuff. But what if you also peel off most of people's skin?
Okay, interesting.
Because then everybody's also more sensitive to pain. Yeah. So even, you know, even small acts of violence will be heinous.
So like, you know, we're at the moment we're pushing for the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. And, you know, eventually, ideally, the entire world would be denuclearized.
Sure.
To, you know, reduce the chances of catastrophic violence. But what you're pitching is if nobody had any skin,
yeah,
then what a wonderful world this world would be.
Yeah, the epidermization.
Yeah, the hyperexfoliation.
The hyperexfoliation of
the human population.
And so then
it'll be great in wraps as well.
Yeah, what was it again?
The hyperexfoliation of the human population.
Oh, yeah, that'll be great. Yeah, at least one rapper will get to use it.
Yeah. And, you know, in a way we're unwrapping people as well.
That's true. I rap about the unwrap that occurred, about the hyperexfoliation of the denuclearization of the population.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could still believe, I guess it doesn't really stop the problem of denuclearization. You probably still need to do that.
Yeah, right. Okay. I mean,
nuclear bombs would only become a bigger problem, really.
If anything, yeah.
There's only so many fridges that we can hide in, like Indiana Jones, to protect ourselves from nuclear bombs.
Which I, for one, was convinced by, and I thought was an excellent plot point that only strengthened an otherwise flawless film.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the problem, though. The only problem is that every household has one, at most two fridges.
Yes.
Often three, four, five people in a house. You know? And although he's given us a beautiful solution, who's the director of that film?
Steven Spielberg.
Steven Spielberg. Although he's given us a wonderful solution to the nuclear, you know, an alternative to the nuclear disarmament. If only houses, sort of like big ships, had sort of rescue fridges that they were like just attached to the side of the house.
Interesting.
That you could just lower in the event of, you know, a bomb is coming.
Yeah. Or I think like they don't necessarily, well, I guess they, you know, that's perfectly valid, Alistair, rescue fridges. I also like the idea that they're almost, you know, because in a spaceship, right, you've got your escape pods.
Yeah.
They are little spaceships.
Yeah.
I kind of like the idea of little houses that you could get into on the sides of the house that will drop off. But then, of course, they don't go anywhere. They would just sit there on the ground next to the house.
Yeah.
Can we write down removing people's skin as a form of, like, radical demilitarization of some kind? Like, you know, it's by making people much more sensitive, yes, we're also making them more vulnerable to disease. Mm-hmm. And I would say that overall, probably the number of deaths worldwide will go up as a result of this.
But there's a chance that, you know, alongside it will come, you know, greater powers for disinfecting.
Oh, sure, there's a chance.
Infections?
Yeah. And certainly, again, we'll have more incentive to come up with them.
There's got to be an upper limit to how powerful bacteria can get. You know, that's how resistant to things.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, like, there's. Surely.
Yeah. I mean, nothing's totally.
Look, this
indestructible.
Is, this is from basic conversations I've had with some biologists.
Yep.
But I know that, like,
this is from your basic conversations with biologists series.
Series, yeah.
Yeah.
This is while I was feeding mosquitoes. So while I had my arm in a cage filled with 300 mosquitoes, and the mosquitoes were biting my arm.
This is actually the perfect situation to have a basic conversation with a biologist.
Well, I'm trapped anyway, so I may as well speak to the biologists in the room.
It was that or the mosquitoes.
Yeah.
And you'd already exhausted all your small talk.
Really small talk. Anyway, I asked them, and there's a thing with, like, that, you know, they bacteria carry certain, you know, they can add things to their body, you know, that kind of like parallel evolution stuff where they can take a trait that's in the form of a protein or something like that from,
yeah,
another,
from another bacteria.
I can't remember what they're called, but
they're almost like plug and play. It's like Lego.
Yeah, but you can only, every time you add another thing to your body, it's, there is an evolutionary disadvantage to that.
There's a
because
payoff.
You're, well, there's a payoff, but then there's also the opposite of a payoff.
Pay on.
Yeah, well, you know where it's like
a cost.
A cost, thank you. And so, like, you know, it makes you heavier, makes you less capable of moving quickly. Maybe you can't catch prey as easily and shit like that.
Yeah, so, you know, yeah, it's like you're loading yourself up with armor.
Mm.
Well, you can't carry as many guns or something.
Exactly, yeah. Or, you know, or you can't run from, like, grenades, which are one of the few things that can probably penetrate armor very easily.
Do you think there's a sketch in sort of the angle of, and this, I have, like, this is not, there's no comedy in this suggestion. There's almost nothing in this suggestion.
Okay.
But there's a, is there a sketch in something to do with CRISPR that, you know, genetic, you know, household genetic manipulation sort of technology that is making editing genes of bacteria and that sort of thing accessible to almost anyone, really? It's, you know, it's putting the power in the hands of the you and I.
Yeah, right.
The everyday Joe.
I didn't know it was that easy.
It's not quite that easy, but it's more or less that easy. Like, you know, what once would have been an insanely complicated thing, it can now be done really, really simply.
Okay.
In labs all over the place. And I feel like, you know, not too far down the track, your kid.
My kid.
Your
Otis.
Kid. Your son, Otis, when he's in grade 2 or 3, one of his school projects will be genetic modification.
Just like
of some
making
kind.
Like a pig chimera.
Yeah.
Like a pig man.
Yeah.
A pig man, like, with sausage nipples.
Yeah.
That'll be, like, that'll, so, because, you know, so, like, those, you know, like, those fucked drawings that kids give to parents anyway.
Yeah.
Instead, it'll just be a fucked animal.
Yeah, they'll actually make it a reality. And, you know, much like drawing within the lines of a picture at the moment, you know, kids are expected to colour in and draw within the lines.
Yeah.
You know, with this technology, they'll be expected to, I guess, stay within the bounds of, you know, ethical scientific behaviour, maybe.
Yeah, but they have trouble.
Or they'll have to create something that is capable of surviving in, you know, under Earth-like conditions.
So it'll be sort of like, so their little school projects will be things like CRISPR and genetic modification. Probably they'll learn stuff about big data science.
Yeah.
You know, they'll probably, I guess they'll be taught a bit of white hat hacking and then big data science, and then they'll learn how to sort of like siphon stuff off of from Google and Facebook and shit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they'll learn like, how to like, they'll change their parents'
behavior
through their Instagram accounts or something like that.
Yeah, elementary social media manipulation of like, population sets using targeted, you know, whatever it is. This is all going to be done. Yeah, this is a sort of, because this is the future. These are the jobs of the future. These are the skills that employers are looking for. And at the moment, they're finding that, you know, that Australian kids aren't getting taught this sort of stuff. This is what the employers are crying out for. And so the national curriculum is going to have to be modified so that kids, you know, as young as 2 or 3 are learning about, you know, wholesale electoral fraud.
Well, it's important at this stage because or else we're going to fall behind.
We're going to fall behind,
and
exactly.
Then, you know, I guess they could probably be writing sort of spam bots that... But also, I guess they'll be involved in a lot of sort of pretty high-tech, you know, video manipulation that allows them to sort of make propaganda that, you know, changes the faces of certain people and puts, like, you know, rather than the faces of a famous person, maybe the face of a teacher or something like that, or us.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Maybe to threaten
or
us.
Or their parents or something like that. Yeah.
Go clean your room. Oh, yeah? Well, if you tell me to go clean my room, I'm going to make a video of you.
Release a deep fake of you engaged in a disgusting act. And,
yeah. And have you put in prison and...
Yeah.
Yeah, like maybe make it go viral. They can manipulate a lot of the social media like elites. They'll have connections with them, and they'll be able to sort of, you know, falsify
a movement, a viral.
Yeah, a viral movement.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what we should be expecting from our teachers, and that's the skills that we expect our children to have.
These days, yeah.
These days, or, you know, very soon.
Yeah, and if they could make scones or something like that, it'd be good too. Like, but, you know, I might be coming from an older world.
I feel like they could genetically engineer an animal that makes scones.
That is a scone. That tastes and looks like a scone.
I saw a tiny... You don't know what it's like having a kid, Alistair. When you become a father,
yeah,
it changes you and, you know, everything
so
changes.
So you're different.
Yeah, I'm different.
Do you think like you're angrier and sort of like you snap at me more and you're
sure that's
more,
part of it.
There's more tension in the air.
That's part of it, Alistair. That's part of it. That's very much part of it. But also part of it is now that like you're just so sensitive to stuff. Like I saw a tiny little bit of a clip of a new Pixar short, which had like a little talking dumpling. And I couldn't keep watching it because the dumpling was so cute and I was worried about it getting eaten.
Mm.
And, yeah, it was
like an actual dumpling, like a Chinese dumpling?
Yeah, yeah.
And it spoke?
It spoke. It was in a little bowl and it spoke. Was and I was like, I can't watch any more seconds of this because I'm worried about the welfare of this baby dumpling.
So it was seconds. It wasn't like the main meal.
It's going back for more. It's quite possible. All the other dumplings, I think, had been eaten. I started to worry about what had happened to them.
Is this a Ratatouille 2? He gets into Asian cooking?
Ratatouille. Mm.
Ratatouille 2. Anyway. Well, like you know, as you know, Andy, I've also been changed in that way. And today I was telling you about even just thinking of the day where NASA announces that they've found life on another planet.
Yeah.
And I started to weep. Just the thought that we do go, oh my God, we're not alone. And somehow, like, it's like, oh, that's a really weird feeling. And I didn't realize I really needed to hear that.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I didn't react in the same way as you, Alistair. Mm. But I think it's interesting that, like, the discovery of other species may make humanity as a whole aware of emotions, background emotions that we've had our entire lives,
mm.
you know, like a child who grows up without a father might not realize, you
sure.
know.
They've got some stuff.
Yeah, they've got some stuff.
Anxiety maybe.
Oh,
some
look,
sort.
I feel like now I'm saying that children need a father in order to be whole. But what the whole point was that maybe humanity, you know, when we discover another species, we'll realize that we were looking as humans for a friend this entire time.
Exactly. I mean, it could also work with, like, somebody who gets to, let's say, 18
mm.
and tries, like, you know, melted cheese on toast.
Yes.
And they go, oh, my God, I didn't realize I'd been carrying around an anxiety.
Okay,
my
Alistair, that's really offensive for you to suggest that kids who don't have melted cheese on toast are somehow not living a full life.
Andy, if you ask me,
and you're
I'm
just
sorry,
trying,
and I'm
trying
not...
to suggest that parents who can't provide their kids with melted cheese on toast are somehow... not real parents.
Andy.
And not a real family.
I'm sorry, but I don't apologize for this. That was an attempt at humor.
Yeah, it's good.
But
I was doing, and mine was arguably less funny.
Well, great.
Great.
But I just think that a child needs at least a mother or a father.
Or?
No. It needs at least some kind of guardian.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And a piece of melted cheese on toast.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying, Alistair, mm-hmm. and I realize that, you know, melted cheese on toast can bring people comfort.
Right.
I realize that a parent
sure.
or a guardian, whoever that may be, can also bring people comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to see those two things calibrated against each other. You know,
against.
Yes. So, for example, if you didn't have mother yep. or father, whatever it is that you might feel is missing from your life, mm-hmm. exactly how much melted cheese on toast is that equivalent to?
That's true, yeah.
So, okay. you know, and because a lot of people who feel they're missing whatever it is from their lives try yeah. and fill that hole in their life with something, cheese, whatever it is, food.
Sure.
You know, exercise, drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel like they can't actually fill that hole.
Right.
But that might just be because we don't know exactly how much you need.
Or like maybe what shape hole it is. Maybe you need to be eating smaller pieces.
Right, so they can get into the corners.
They can get into the corners.
Yeah,
and like that.
Chewing yeah. it up more.
Because, I mean, sometimes a lot of, yeah, the problem is just the amount of mastication that's occurring.
It's the mastication issue.
Mastication calculation.
Yeah. Mistake your...
Miscalculation. Mastication miscalculation.
Is there something in that? Is there something in trying to, you know, that these comfort foods...
Sure.
Or we rank all the comforts, you know, that having, you know, being at home...
So,
with a loving family, so I guess is equal to about 48 tons.
So I guess of the kind of the, I guess sandwiches. The premise of the sketch, if we were to break it down,
yes,
it's about orphans.
Mm-hmm. Or... Yeah, great. No, that's good.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, if we always feel like, oh, we can't give these people necessarily the family that they wanted for what you know, some sort of reason, but we have worked out exactly how to give them the equivalent amount of comfort through other means.
Sure. What if
this is equal inside this truck? The contents of this truck are equal, mathematically equivalent to a happy childhood.
What about in order to just when I said this was about orphans, I think I was trying to make that funny in that I thought that was maybe not. I think the basis of it is a little. There's something missing that it's too sad for it to be what we're going for. So what?
Oh, well, I really leaned into the orphans then.
Yeah, you really leaned into the orphans. I thought you'd feel that, but actually, look, occasionally we don't read each other's...
No, I didn't feel it at all, Alistair. Yeah, I was like, great, orphans.
Yeah, this is perfect.
Comedy fodder.
What if it's trying to make a kid feel better? So it's still a sad kid.
Oh, thank God.
But he's, like, lost a dog.
Okay, yes. Right?
So it's been a very, very important dog. Let's say...
See, this is more sad to me.
Yeah, but that's fine because I think it's less formative.
Okay.
I think it's, yeah. So then you're talking to it about, you know, the comfort that a friend and a dog brings. And then you start talking about cheese on toast, melted cheese on toast. And then you actually find that through calculations that the perfect amount of melted cheese on toast to give this kid to replace his dog.
Yeah.
Is equivalent to one dog made up
of melted cheese.
Made up of melted cheese on toast, sort of stacked up on top of each other into the shape. And then he just has to eat his way through that. And then he will have, like, it will be the end of the grieving process.
I think that's amazing. And I like that more broadly if we can say it's amazing. We've worked out it's like a universal constant that the comfort that you get from anything is equal to that thing's weight in melted cheese. So, you know, sorry to bring back orphans, shape. But like a, yeah, in shape.
And shape.
In, you know, be it lost parents, be it a lost love.
Yeah.
You know.
Maybe you lost like a drone that you got for Christmas.
A drone or a house.
Yeah, you lost your house.
A big, big pile of bricks.
And a big drone fire.
You know that sense of loss that you get when you lose a big pile of bricks?
Yeah, well, that's
equivalent to eating a huge pile of bricks of cheese and toast.
So you eat bricks as well?
No, hell.
So look, I'm going to write cheese on toast.
Yeah.
Comfort
ratio or comfort, one-to-one comfort ratio.
One-to-one comfort, ratio?
Yeah. And I find it appealing that we discover, you know, because it's always nice when you find out there are connections in the universe between other things and, you know, where you might not have expected them. I was really hoping that the Hubble constant would turn out to be one.
What's the Hubble constant? The
Hubble constant is the number that determines how fast the universe is expanding and whether or not the universe is going to continue expanding, it's going to reach a steady state, or it's going to collapse.
Yeah.
Right? And if the Hubble constant is one, it's going to reach a steady state. If it's greater than one, it's going to keep expanding. If it's less than one, it's going to collapse.
Steady state, it means it'll just stop?
Yeah, it'll reach a certain size and then stop expanding because there's enough mass in the universe to slow the gravity, slow the expansion through gravity.
It just feels like that could never really happen.
Well, you're right. The universe would still experience heat death, but like the expansion of the universe in terms of...
But it wouldn't just slow down. Like it would... I don't know what the edge would look like. It feels like the edge can't stop moving.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know. Anyway, they were trying to find it out. Anyway, I think they found out it's going to keep expanding forever.
Really?
Yeah. Well, that's the current take on what, working out what that number is. Look, I'm just trying to remember some stuff. I could be wrong about everything.
That's fine.
Anyway, what I'm saying is that, like, when a universal constant or something like that, something about the universe turns out to be some really satisfying correlation, like one, that'd be great. Whereas this, the 1-to-1 ratio of melted cheese to lost love or whatever it is.
Now, do you think that they would have to make the cheese on toast sculpture in one go and then you just eat your way through it?
That's what I quite like about it.
Yeah.
I like seeing when the child who's lost its dog is presented with this huge sort of melted, hideous mass of cheese on toast.
And I guess that's kind of also why it's like, it'll be easier, like, let's say for a young kid to, you know, lose a goldfish, because then they kind of get used to that concept of eating melted cheese
eating
on toast.
Yeah,
it's just smaller. Yeah. But, you know, but there's a limit to eating your feelings in this. You know that there's an end to it. So you're also learning not to just go overboard.
Okay, now how about this? Grandma dies. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the family is sad.
Yeah.
Do we need a cheese on toast grandma for every member of the family? Or can we all gather around and eat the one cheese on toast grandma? Because I feel like there's an element to that of which is like that brings people together. That time spent as a family eating the cheese on toast grandma could be, just as valuable. And that's actually part of the grief eating process.
I think that that's a nice thing to do. But I think every person needs to eat a grandma.
Then I'd like to pitch as a sort of a separate half sketch, a cultural practice whereby, in this culture, when a loved one dies, they get together and eat an equivalent cheese on toast. The family eats an equivalent cheese on toast.
Or like their favorite food, but it shapes like them.
Made into,
I mean, let's say...
When I die...
Let's say their favorite food was a dumpling.
Yep.
Would you do a stack of dumplings shaped like them, or would you make a core mince meat kind of thing, and then just put that noodle over the top and sort of like pinch it around?
This is worrying because I think already the human body is too close to being a dumpling.
Yeah, but you would remove all the bones. There wouldn't be any bones.
Yeah, I guess. But you might need to keep the structure of a dumpling that big. You might have to put in some kind of skeleton.
That's for the dumpling engineers to figure out, Andy. Like, I'm going to write as the mini sketch that eat.
Yeah, okay. Eat a lost family member culture. Hey, Al.
Yeah.
Here's something fun. Which culture do you think would do that? Let's assign it to a particular culture around the world.
Well, I think you know, a lot of the colonies, like the one we're in, need
more
culture.
Yes,
because I mean,
right.
If there's one thing that people are constantly throwing at white people at the moment.
Yep.
Is that they don't have any culture.
That's great.
Right? And so we're putting an end to it.
Here's another full... Then Alistair, here's another full sketch idea, right? It's the White Culture Institute, okay? And it incorporates that idea that we just came up with then, but it's a group who are inventing novel cultural practices that white people can feel good about, that don't involve any form of appropriation, okay?
Yep.
That are entirely... self-contained, and I feel like eating your relatives' weight in their favorite food.
Yeah, but weight and shape.
Weight and shape.
at their wake.
Mm. Mm.
And then later on their nap.
Yeah. What?
Wake and nap.
Wake and nap.
Because you gotta eat.
You wake up from a nap.
Well, first you're at the wake, and then you eat their body in dumplings or, you know, spaghetti bolognese.
Right. And then you need to...
And then you nap.
Then you sleep it off and then you wake up and you've that's the grieving process.
That's a lot of the grieving process.
It's
right
out
there.
Of the way.
Yeah. I think you should get, at least, you know, one paid day a year to do that.
Now, this is nice as well, like, because it is the... We're consolidating because I think the 5 stages of grieving, that's too many.
Yeah.
So now we've got it down to 2.
It's got a lot of steps to it.
Yeah.
And this feels like something kind of like Elon Musk would want, because he loves He loves streamlining things, yes, getting rid of non-useful meetings and whatnot.
Layers of bureaucracy. Red tape.
Yeah. You literally process someone's death by processing them through your body.
I really got that out of my system.
Yeah. And that's, like, that would be the most sort of mournful poop.
Mm.
And the thing is that you'd probably work your way through the hands and legs, you know, like the feet instead of the ankles and all that
stuff.
So you
think like the face you eat last?
Well, I don't know. I think it's that chest and torso that you really struggle through. And it's, and that's also like why having a big family, you know, the metaphor of the support network and everything like that is even more powerful when
you're helping
each other to finish this body.
Now, I mean, look, how horrible do you want this conversation to be, Alistair? Because I think there's some more detail we can go into.
I would love that.
Right. So I think that also part of it then is going to be the process of making this food together, right? And what that's going to involve is making a plaster cast of your dead relative.
Yeah, right.
Right. Turning that into a mold, lining that mold with something, filling it up with whatever foodstuffs. Now, I picture, and I think this could be quite a good thing, this could be the return of preserved meats in aspic. Remember aspic? You ever seen this? It's like a kind of a boiled animal bone type jelly. Yeah, it's a clear jelly, right? And into that jelly, you can set a whole lot of stuff. So you can set in all their favorite foods. Sure. You know, even if they've got a range of things, even some small trinkets and objects.
But wait, is this just what we're making their basic mold?
No, we've made the mold, right? Yeah. And then we're pouring this aspic into the mold. Which that's going to form the overall form of the body, like the general shape. Yeah. That's going to...
I think we can only do this if that's their favorite food.
No, but we got the aspic, and then into that aspic, that's where we insert their favorite food. So it's got some structural integrity.
Okay, right. I see.
Alistair, I feel like you're not following this.
No, well,
It's really clear.
It's very clear. I mean, and that's why it's a jelly, right?
That's why it's a jelly.
Yeah. Anyway. So then you're just sort of thumbing dumplings into this aspic.
Well, this is before it sets. You put them in there and then you let them set.
So it's like a liquid.
Liquid. It's a liquid, right? And then you drop all the stuff in there that you want.
Okay, I was imagining bananas, you chilled it in this giant fridge.
No, then you chill it after all the foods are in there. Anyway, look, Alice said maybe it's not going to work, okay? I just put it out there. I took a risk. I went out on a limb.
I thought that was... Look, and I think that, Andy... As members of the White Culture Institute, it's up to us to make sure that we are looking at all angles in which these things can be done, and that you know we can at least begin by distributing to different sort of subcultures or different areas of you know the country or the world. Different ways of doing this to see kind of where they take up, you know, so we can get some data.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
See how people like it.
That's interesting because, you know, it'd be good to have, like, just some, in general, new cultural practices that sort of anybody can access, like you would an app. You know, you bring it up on your phone, maybe you pay a couple of bucks, and you get access to new cultural practices that are open source, they're royalty free, so they're not associated with any particular culture, and they're the sort of thing that you can't possibly offend anybody cross any lines that you don't want to cross.
I think the tech culture would be really into that. They love a bit of open source.
Yeah.
Open source culture. That'll be the kind of stuff that the White Culture Institute will create.
Yeah, well, eventually when they want to monetize this stuff that they're doing.
I mean, technically through having been a culture that has imposed their values onto other cultures, I think that also makes automatically other cultures capable of just taking their things anyway.
Yeah.
Because they're from, it's being imposed on them anyway.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because then, if somebody dies at the office, and then the boss is like, well, let's get a thing made up of like salami baguettes made up of Mark.
Yeah.
Like that, and then they get it, and then you kind of have like a work one, and sometimes
everybody gathers around with their little paper plates and eats their salami, their portion of salami baguette Mark.
Yeah. Mm. And then people who are not necessarily white will also have to do that, and so for them to then bring that idea back to their homes, we can't blame them for appropriating that bit of culture, because we're pushing it on them.
Yeah.
And that's through these damn white people being at the top of a lot of these major corporations.
Well, and it's almost like, because in Australia, when we have new people come to this country, we expect them to do things the way we do things here.
That's what I hear.
And this would be part of that. Yeah. If you're coming to Australia, you're going to do things the Australian way.
Yeah.
Right? So we don't want your weird foreign culture over here.
Yeah.
When you come here, what we do when someone dies is we eat them.
Yeah, and unless your weird foreign culture thing that you do,
yes,
unless that's the deceased's favorite food,
right? Okay, well then that's interesting. That's very nice.
Yeah,
that it can accommodate. And that's the beauty of our multiculturalism. Mm-hmm. That within the Australian way of life, there's so many ways that we can incorporate. We still allow people to express themselves.
That's right, because there's a chance that Mark from Saudi Arabia, who works in the finance department, it was this loose minced meat crepes things that he made right with like a weird spice that nobody knows. Turns out he brought those in one day. That was the guy who died's favorite thing he'd ever eaten.
Great.
So suddenly, CEO comes in, says, guy just died, his favorite food, Mark, it was those crepes you brought in with the loose meat and that spice that nobody could pick, right? So now you got to make it.
Yeah.
You got to make it. We can get people in. We can get Susie. We can get Trevor.
Everybody make a different limb.
We can, but we'll all come and you can show us how to do it and we'll...
I'm actually getting a little emotional.
Yeah, as emotional as finding out we're not alone in the universe.
Well, I don't care about sport.
No.
I don't care about the AFL. The only time I really get excited about it is when I see somebody from a different culture getting really excited about it.
Yeah.
Someone who's come to Australia.
Great.
And I'm like, oh, this is beautiful. The system works.
Well, so you get
you value this thing.
So you get excited by assimilation.
That's right. Nothing excites me like assimilation. I like to see them shed the things that made them unique and just fold in, fold into our sort of drunken, yobbo kind of oppressive, toxic masculinity.
Absolutely.
When I see that subsume them like a wave crashing over a drowning man, that's when I think, yes,
or
the system works.
Imagine watching like a really dehydrated person, like you've got goggles on.
Yeah.
You're in the ocean with a really dehydrated person.
What?
And you go underwater and you're looking for fish. You see them piss. You see them piss into the ocean. They're treading water. You guys are in deep. But he's at the top. You see the piss, and this cloud of yellow comes, just kind of like materializes, sort of moves like smoke off a cigarette.
Billows out.
Billows out around the crotochrachial area.
Yeah.
Like that. And then slowly you see it start sort of shifting and widening, but then fading in color. you know, and then slowly disappearing and assimilating with the water around it.
Right. So the immigrant was the piss.
Yeah. The immigrant was the piss. And the ocean was white people. Or general Australia culture.
And now they're just like, they're spread and everywhere.
That your friend's sort of genitals was like their home country. Oh,
surely their bladder is the home country and the genitals are Australians' border protection
or
regime.
Like a plane.
Or an aeroplane.
Yeah, or an aeroplane or like a cruise ship.
Yeah, no, your metaphor worked better, I reckon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because yours had waves crashing on a person.
Well, actually,
I didn't know
your
what
metaphor worked better because it totally erased my metaphor from my mind. Like, I was incapable of thinking about that or anything else ever again, probably.
Yeah. So
We have three words from a listener.
No, wait, we're not quite there yet.
What do you mean?
This was a half sketch.
Yeah, but now
this is the fourth one. And also, we have to mention the
Harry's Razors.
Yeah.
Alistair, we don't have to mention Harry's Razors. Well, we get to mention Harry's Razors.
It's a huge
every few weeks. Alistair and I, you know, it's like something you get a nod at work, right? You get a promotion, you get a chance to show yourself on a new area in a new skill set.
Talent quest,
and this is the sort of thing that could lead you anywhere, you know. Yeah. Opens doors. So this is our chance to do that. But talking about Harry's Razors.
Yeah.
Harry's.com, you know, they, two guys, Joe and Andy, you know, they got sick of spending too much money on, you know, on these razors, which are, it's a pain having to buy the things. You go to the supermarket, they're not there on the shelf or they're locked to a thing. You've got to go and ask them to get the razors from behind the counter.
Mm-hmm.
And they treat you like a criminal.
Absolutely.
These people are treating you like dirt.
Yeah.
You're everywhere else in society, it's innocent until proven guilty, except for when you're trying to buy a razor.
Yeah.
And then they assume you're a shoplifter, a thief, a dirty thief, not Harry's.
Sometimes they even carry it with them to the counter.
Right.
And they don't even let you touch it until you've got money in your hand.
Yeah, yeah, and they can see it. Sometimes they make you meet in the middle of a bridge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have the money in a bag. Right, and they've got the razor, they're blindfolded, and they push it out towards you.
Sometimes they have a sniper set up at the end of the bridge.
Yeah, so if you touch that razor...
He's got a laser on your chest until you've handed over the suitcase.
And they get
the
money, and they count the money there in front of you.
Yeah.
And then they realize that the money, because it costs so much, these razors, you've only just put a layer of hundreds on the top, and then underneath, it's all tofu, slabs of tofu.
Yeah.
And then the sniper shoots you and your razor in the head.
Yeah. So Harry's razors went around that.
Yeah,
so
they managed to cut out that whole system, right? And they streamlined it. In fact, Harry's have sort of almost gone the opposite in that they give you the razor for free when you buy your starter pack, right? You just pay the cost of shipping.
How much is that,
Alistair, Andy? I don't know. $1 billion.
A few bucks?
A couple of bucks, Alistair.
A few bucks.
It's nothing.
If you say people associate that with two.
Right. Right, and then they might think two twos, right?
Then that's four, and they might think two fours.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's eight, and that's starting to get big.
Yeah, well, when you say a couple, you mean a couple of fours?
Yeah.
No, I mean like a couple of ones probably at most, all right? And so they give you that for free. It's $13 worth of value. You got your razors. You got your travel case. Alistair, you love the travel case.
Love the travel case. I also love that foam. That jelly foam.
That foam feels so good.
Oh, smells so good.
Yeah, that's when I die. That's what they're going to make me out of because I would like to eat that foam.
Are we going to eat a whole body of Andy out of that
foam?
Foam
Andy.
And
foam
it's not edible.
It's not. But it smells like it could be.
Yeah, and Andy loves it, and he does eat it, and he's dying because of it. I don't know if that's true, and don't believe that.
When I die, you probably won't even have to make me out of foam. I'll just be foam. That's how much foam I've eaten.
Yeah, that's great.
And you get $13 worth of value. You get the razor, you get your weighted handles, beautiful travel case, all this stuff. All right? Do yourselves a favor. Harry's.com/think tank. Harry's.com/think tank.
Get out there right now.
Get started. Get shaving. Get smooth.
Get
smooth, baby.
I don't care what gender you are. You shave something.
Yes.
Even if you aren't shaving yourself,
There's something in your life.
Buy a fur coat, shave that.
just for the experience.
Yeah. Get one of those, like, you know those, like, those cow or sheep mats that you just, like, a rug on the ground? Those are just practice shaving opportunities.
That's right, you know, and even, you don't have to shave the whole thing, but surely you don't want that whole thing to be hairy, right? You want a patch of bare skin on there somewhere. You shave yourself a little clearing in the woods.
That's right.
Right? And that's somewhere where you can lay down a sandwich.
Yeah.
It's not going to get hair in it.
Yeah, or you could lay a plate with, you know, a portion of one of your recently deceased loved ones.
Yes, perfect.
Maybe the cow.
Harrys.com/thick tech Yeah, but we do have these four words, Alistair. Do you want
to? I know, but we still have to come up with one other sketch.
Why? I thought the extra sketch was included in the five sketch ideas that we come up with.
I guess that was where the mistake you've been
making.
I guess
that's where I was wrong.
Yeah.
Well, this whole time. No, that's all right.
It's okay. So we got two eyes.
Yeah.
We got two ears.
Yes.
One butt.
Yeah, one butt.
But the two cheeks.
Yeah.
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 Is there anything in the body that really lacks symmetry?
Well, the mouth.
The mouth lacks symmetry?
Well, okay, it doesn't have... So you want something that's like on one side of the body that's not on the other side of the body, right? I guess the heart and the appendix are both asymmetrical, right?
Yeah, right.
And that's about it. Like, you've got your heart on one side and your appendix on the other. Maybe the spleen is a little off to one side. Maybe the liver is also a little...
Oh, the forward back symmetry is off.
Forward back, so we're not the same on the front as we are on the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no one ever claimed that was a line of symmetry, Alistair. There's no front buttock.
I know, but I want the perfectly symmetrical person.
Wow. Symmetry is attractive.
Yeah. That's right.
And that is apparently something that the eye is drawn to, and more beautiful people are more symmetrical.
And as you know about me, Andy, I've often complained that, you know how, like, sometimes you're walking around town and you see someone from the back and you think, that's a person that I know.
Yes.
And then you go up to them and you tap them on the shoulder and you realize, oh, that's not them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we don't want that to happen anymore.
I feel like we've already done this on the podcast, Alistair, people have to be the same on the back as they are on the front.
No, this is...
This is different?
Well, look, I'm not going to lie. I'm bringing in an outside idea.
Yeah, okay.
But this is when we were coming up with a sketch idea for our show.
Oh, was it?
This is the guy who was trying to change the universe.
Yes.
And one of the ideas was that he was sick of people looking... people shouldn't be allowed to look different on the back as they do on the front. Because why... So... If we had perfect symmetry and you also just had a face on your back and a front on your back.
Yes.
So instead of just like a plain back, because it's like somebody didn't put that much work into the back.
Uh-huh.
Right? They kind of just like,
yeah.
Whatever. Whatever with the front.
Like
when
you see a theater, a theater building, the front is always beautiful.
Yeah.
Right? And then, you know, fantastic facade, elaborate, ornate.
Yeah.
And then you see behind that, the theater building, it's just some huge warehouse or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like that with the back of the human body.
Or even just the set on a theater. Like the set of a, you know, it looks like a beautiful castle, you know, when you're watching on the stage. And then go behind it, it's just a panel.
A panel. Maybe there's a man there holding a rope.
Yeah, holding a rope or something like that. There's
and then
some
you
guy...
look at that man. Nice on the front.
Yeah.
Right? Face, eyes, all this interesting stuff. You walk around behind him.
So I think maybe...
A bit of hair? Look,
first theory here, God was like a set designer.
Yes.
And then he got into biologics.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, biology.
I think...
But what I'm saying, sorry, and hold that idea, but what I'm suggesting is back looks exactly like the front. It's not like we're putting in that much more work.
Mm.
We're just flipping it so there's symmetry. And I don't even want the back to be alive. So I want it to look like you're carrying a dead version of yourself, like a lifeless face of yours. Yes. Yeah. I don't want it to match what your front face is doing.
Okay.
Right?
Just neutral.
Just neutral.
Just resting dead face.
Yeah, sort of like it might just look like you but stoned.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And you're lugging it around. Also, I want back hands.
Back hands.
A back set of hands on the back of your hand. So let's say you would have two pinkies meeting up back side to side.
I don't see why the front of the hand can't just look like the back of the hand, right?
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Okay, well, instead of having just a second hand coming off the side, but it's, like, limp.
Yeah. that I really don't like.
I know, but I kind of like it. So it actually just completely looks like you're carrying a dead version of yourself on your back. Because then, when you're walking around town and you see somebody, you would recognize them.
I mean, that from is the good. Back. That is good. Okay, and that's...
And symmetry is attractive.
Now, how about this, though? Right? Because I think God probably meant to fill in the back, right?
Yeah.
If he got around to it, but he didn't have time, ran out of budget, whatever it is. I think the back deserves to have its own features. So we make up some more, right? Sure, it won't be symmetrical, but at least it won't be boring, right?
Yeah.
And you think of, like, if we got more features on the back, that there's so much more that can be done in terms of fashion, cosmetics, whatever it may be, acting, you know?
Of course,
think of expression, personal expression.
Back-spression.
Back-spression. Thank you. The art of acting is the art of back-ting.
Re-back-ting. Back-ting is re-back-ting.
Best supporting backter. Okay? We have... For the Oscars, we have a whole separate set of Oscars for the acting people do with their backs. And it's nothing like anything we've seen on the front, because all the features on the back, they're totally new features.
They're new. They don't exist right now.
Yes.
Okay. Right. So there's probably going to be some openings.
Yes, there's going to be some openings. There's the blamp. You've got a blamp on the back of your head.
So it's like a little, like a light.
Yes.
Like a little backlight, and it sort of dims and widens and things like that. Sort of like a pupil.
Dims and widens,
Dims and widens, sort of like a pupil, but it's like a pupil with a light on it, and it's big.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? The ass is the only unique feature of the back.
Right. You're absolutely right. The ass is,
Everything else is just colouring in whatever.
Shading a bit more of the hair, keep that going down there, and then just pink. Just make the rest pink or whatever colour they are on the front.
Skin colour.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so like there'll be like a pupil light.
Yeah.
I think if there was like sort of like not flesh hairs.
I was thinking flesh hairs.
Yeah, but like a kind of a flesh hair, but that have like something that kind of make them move like a, you know, like coral. You know, maybe if you touch them, they suck back in.
Yeah. What about just a line of that down the middle? Of the back of the head.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I was thinking on the back. Because I was thinking the pupil light was on the back.
Yeah, well, that's there
back
as
of the
well.
Head. Sorry, back of the head.
You'd have both.
Yeah. I mean, if you had like an array of pupil lights.
Yes.
You know, it kind of, it's a bit cuttlefish kind of.
Interesting.
You know, squiddy a little bit. Like, you know, maybe because then you could really like do patterns and, you know, widen up. Do it just a full, you could do full fog light.
I tell you what, I'm really excited about this back, these back features. I actually think they're already sounding quite a bit more exciting to me than any of the features that we have on the front.
Absolutely, yeah. And also those little flesh hairs.
Yeah.
If you were laying on your back, you could walk like a millipede. Like it could just carry you around like a millipede.
Like in a scene from a cartoon where ants are stealing a picnic.
That's right. Or a person at the picnic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always liked those scenes. Me I don't know too. What it was. People always look so peaceful.
When they're being taken away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like kind of like when you're falling out of a building. At some point, there's just an acceptance.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, same thing happens when you get carried away by ants to their nest.
I want something that could curl up on the back. It'd be good as well, you know?
I mean, like some kind of like back of leg hands or like, I guess like, you know, sort of the way that an elephant trunk can kind of curl up and act like a hand.
Yeah, we've discussed that on the podcast.
But what about, it's just kind of like a flap, just like a dangling flap of skin.
I was thinking exactly this.
Yeah, it kind of starts at the back of the thigh, and it just kind of dangles down, sort of like a, kind of like a ribbon that you would dangle, like, you know, like for a king or something like that.
I'm thinking like a roller blind. You know, or the lid of a old-fashioned can of sardines, something you can roll up and down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, I picture it rolling like a can of sardines, like that. I mean, if it kind of, like, just sat near the top of your leg in a spiral sometimes, you know, like, and then you could just let it go. When you're relaxed, it kind of just droops.
It flops down.
It flops down.
I mean, it sounds useful.
It, like... I mean, but you could pick up things with it, maybe, like, and hold it in the spiral.
Well, you know what would actually be good,
it's like
though?
A forked tongue.
If it was in your lower back, right, above your buttocks, and rolled down across your ass, this is like you got a flap to cover your ass.
Oh, yeah, right. I was picturing, him sort of thin like a... Like about a belt.
Yeah.
And if they were started at the top of your back, and it's they go all the way around. Oh no, they go just around the back. Sorry, just the back. They go down the back and they kind of like act like a hula skirt.
Yeah.
You know, but they're forked at the end, sort of like a number one prize ribbon.
Right. Well, I think we got that sorted out.
So then we have...
We've got some back features.
More back features. Unique. And obviously then, those allow for a lot of expression for the number one, for best actor.
Yeah. I think it's great.
Best supporting
actor. I almost
want
God to come back, right? God arrives. God reveals himself again in the sky and says... Hey everyone, thanks so much for getting on without me. I'm sorry. I know I always meant to finish the back. Anyway.
That's kind of why Jesus needs to come back.
Yeah.
He's coming back.
Mm.
What he means, he's coming for the back, to finish the back.
Yes. No, that's...
Okay, we got to do these three words. We have three words from Jack Henderson. I don't believe we've done these. Thank you, Jack, for sending in your words through Patreon.
Thank
I think
so
this
much,
is from
Jack.
Ages ago, and we may have forgotten to do them.
Well, Jack, it's going to be worth it.
Or we've done them, and we've completely forgotten that we've done them.
That too.
It doesn't matter. Life, it turns out, we don't remember most of it now. All right, so there's diffusing.
Yes.
There's bombs.
Yes.
And there's situations. These are our three words. Diffusing, bombs, situations. Now, and he had put a slash in between as if like... to suggest it could be either, but it's both.
A bomb or a situation. Now, what I want to know, Alistair, is it defusing or is it diffusing? Because you've been pronouncing it diffusing.
Yeah. Defusing. Is that how I...
You've been saying diffusing.
Diffusing.
Like something would diffuse, like the urine of your dehydrated man in the ocean diffuses.
Sure.
But then there's defuse,
like
you would a bomb.
I mean, I think that's at least the starting point of a sketch.
Because
who's defusing a bomb.
Defusing a bomb.
Yeah.
You just spread the bomb around over as much area as possible so that when it blows up, right, it only blows up a little bit everywhere and people just get a little bit of spring in their step, but nobody is killed.
So it's still functioning as a bomb despite it's kind of been made into a cloud.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Look, here's how I'm seeing it at the moment. So either this guy has some kind of laser that allows him to break the bonds between the atoms in this thing.
Yes.
Right? Or some kind of telekinetic powers.
Sure.
Right? He's got a telekinetic powers, but he needed a job.
Yeah.
Right? This is what happens in the real world.
Yeah.
Right? I mean... once people are done studying people for their weird things, plus being studied, that doesn't pay the rent.
That's right.
Right? All right. So even like, so turns
even
out.
Even Alistair, when he was, you know, involved in the mosquito thing, sticking his arm into a cage for science.
It was $15 for a cage, $15 Kohl's voucher.
For his blood.
For my blood. You know, it's not a lot. So, but. Okay, so he's diffusing bombs. This is what he uses. He works for the police.
You probably had more tongues inside you than anyone.
Well, at least more proboscises.
Yeah.
Yeah, proboscis?
Proboscis. Proboscis.
So it diffuses bombs.
Look, diffuses. But, Alistair, I don't actually like that idea. I think that these three words are so good and there's so much potential in them. That but, we just, like, for sheer comedy, obviously, and, like, the gift that we've been given here by Jack, he's given us a real gift.
He's given us a gift.
Is the very strong and good sketch idea of a person who will diffuse an awkward situation.
Using a bomb.
Using a bomb. Thank you.
So, things get awkward. You've asked somebody where they're from. What
call
they do.
The bomb diffusers.
Yeah.
They come, they have a bomb,
Yeah.
Suddenly, no one's talking about your career or your love life.
Yeah. It's
or whether or not you're pregnant. Nobody cares the fact that you thought that person was pregnant mm-hmm. because we've got more pressing issues. There's a bomb.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's the ultimate distraction. It's an app. It's an online service. Mm-hmm. It's the Uber of distractions. You dial in someone who will call in a bomb threat, who will show up with a gun, who
or just
will
set off a small bomb.
Exactly. Set off a small bomb.
Or a big bomb.
A big bomb.
You know, you're at the park. You're playing. You're watching your kid play on the equipment.
Yes.
Another parent arrives. They've got a kid.
Yes.
You ask, how old's your kid? And they go, oh, yeah, they're six. You go, how old's your kid? And they go, two. Like that. You go, oh, cool. You go to daycare near here? They go, yes. You've run out of things to say.
Okay. Airstrike.
Yeah.
Bam, bam, bam.
Finally, a private commercial use for fighter jets.
Exactly. And now that conversation, that's not awkward anymore, okay? Think of all the things you've got to talk about. Run. Have you seen my child?
Yeah. Where's a good safe place? Where's the nearest bomb shelter?
Exactly. Is that your leg?
Yeah.
You know?
Is that my leg?
Yes. I'm sorry, I accidentally got your leg. Oh, this is awkward. Call in another bomb threat. Bam, bam, bam. Okay.
See, it's
reset.
Perfect.
It's the ultimate reset to any conversation. Thanks very much,
Jack
Henderson. Alistair, do you want to take us through the ideas?
All right, we've got removing people's skin as a form of demilitarization.
Mm-hmm.
It's the next, after you take people's guns away, after you know,
yes.
then you take their skin to make them even more sensitive to lower the amount of violence that they even want to perpetrate. They probably don't even want to move that much because
they can't.
Their nerves are exposed.
Yes.
You know, maybe you could allow, like, you know, they say there's like a lot of layers of skin. You could leave like one or two.
Great.
You know, just enough to, like, so it's like the oxygen doesn't burn your nerves or whatever.
Mm.
You know, there's a bit of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that might be enough to, you know, get rid of some of the weaker bacteria.
Exactly.
We want people to be healthy.
Yeah. Then we got, you know, obviously it's the present and the future of primary school kids, you know, grade two. What are they learning instead of, you know, drawing and things like that? Well, they're doing CRISPR.
Yeah.
They're doing big data science, right? They're doing deep fakes. They're doing, you know, like they're getting in straight in. They're probably like...
But it's all a kid's version.
It's the kid's version. A version.
It's all like, you know, it's the Duplo of... If Lego is, you know, high-level genetic manipulation, this is the Duplo.
Sure. I still think that they're like... They're making a pig with sausage nipples and things like that.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and...
But they're using sort of basic building blocks.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe,
life.
Like, they're doing, like, real, like, you know... like, they're still doing kind of, like, advanced things, but it's, like, with kid-looking sort of toy stuff. Mm-hmm. So maybe they're doing, like, ecological climate hacking.
Yeah, great.
You know, they're finding ways of you know... creating microclimates in different areas to lower
combat
the temperature and combat
global
things
warming.
Like that, or you know, increase the effectiveness of the local like wind farms or something like that.
Yeah, great.
And then obviously we have the cheese on toast comfort 1-to-1 ratio, and that's when you lose something or someone,
you can replace it with the equivalent weight in cheese on toast, weight and shape.
Yeah, and the half sketch that adds to that and is also equally as good. Is, you know, when you get together after a family member dies, you and your family make that person out of their favorite food and you all eat them together.
Yeah.
Then obviously we have the White Culture Institute, that, you know, white people constantly being criticized not having any culture. Well, they're finally putting an end to that by creating an institute that whose job is to create new original culture stuff, including eating your lost family members and things like that. Then we have the... back front human symmetry concept, fixing the problems that God...
My favorite sketches are always the most practical.
Yeah, fixing the problems that that God forgot to, like the problems with the unfinished back of our bodies.
Yeah, I'm still rooting for God to arrive to do this himself.
Yeah, obviously there's a chance. Back. There's a chance, and obviously that's basically the core tenet of Christianity.
I always meant to get around to it.
And then obviously we have. The other idea, which is the unique back features, which is, you know, we do it ourselves, and we just find some great new features for the back to have. Mm. The light pupils, the little crawly hair, fleshy hairs,
yeah.
And you know, the dangly sort of first prize ribbons on that dangle off either the back of your legs or the bottom of your back and things like that.
The arsehole definitely feels like something that was just like a temporary measure.
Yeah, it was just thrown together.
And then all the stuff would just come out like a hole or something for the time being. We'll just hide it in this
between these two pillows.
Yeah.
It's like between these two couch cushions. And then obviously we've got the bomb diffuser app, which is, you know, diffuses awkward situations by dropping a bomb or, you know, calling in a bomb threat. Or
I feel like there are other things they can offer. You know, there'd be a sliding scale.
Just like a single gunshot?
Yeah, a gunshot.
Or like throw a knife that like lands near your head. Go, I gotta go, sorry.
Yeah.
instead of telling people at a party, sorry, I just need to go to the bathroom.
It's, I'm fleeing for my life. Yeah. I have to go, I'm currently being hunted.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry, there's a live gunman.
Yeah. We have an active shooter situation. We have
an active shooter situation and I gotta go.
Here we go. Always with the active shooter. Thank you so much for listening to Two in the Think Tank.
We're on social medias.
I'm at Stupid Old Andy.
I'm at Alistair TB, and we're at 2 in Tank. You can find us on Facebook as well. You can find us on patreon.com/2intank, where you can donate money. If you donate $3, you can give some words. I think we may have run out of words. So anybody who wants to send back in some words, you can do that too. We enjoy your contributions, and it's a good way of helping support the show and these people.
Is us,
yeah.
And George, who edits the podcast. And we want you to go to harrys.com/thinktank and buy a razor if you can.
Yeah, and I believe that we
love you.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.